This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Thanks for hanging out on the Danny Parkin Show. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. 2 hours of Tiger Woods talk in the books, and honestly, I could probably do two more. But the NBA playoffs are underway. We will get back to Tiger Woods probably in an hour or so. Also have last but not least to end the show. But I love the NBA, and it feels a little bit more wide open than it has in the past, which makes these NBA playoffs very exciting. So joining us now on the Danny Parkin Show, we appreciate him staying up with us. He's currently covering Toronto against Orlando. Dan Wieke, national NBA writer for the LA Times with us on CBS Sports Radio and Sirius 206. Dan, thanks so much for the time, man. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm in a little bit of a Tiger hangover as well right now. You know, a big deal up here in Canada. Everybody kind of, during press conferences at the Raptors practice, you know, Kawhi Leonard would be talking, and you could see everybody in the room sort of their eyes shift towards the TVs that had the golf on with the sound on while Kawhi was whispering whatever he was whispering.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know how you go through NBA press conferences when that was going on, because athletes from every sport weighed in on it. Like, it really did show the transcendent nature of what Tiger Woods had become.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, I mean, everybody can kind of appreciate greatness, but I think guys who are at that elite level appreciate it even more. And he's meant so much to athletes, particularly black athletes in this country. I think to see sort of the outpouring for that, it wasn't surprising. It was such an emotional thing. And guys know how hard it is to come back from injuries. Guys know how hard it is to accomplish, you know, consistent greatness over, you know, multiple decades. It was, I don't know, probably the best thing I've seen in sports in 10 years, 20 years. I can't even think of something close, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm a Cubs fan, so 2016 was pretty ridiculous, but this is right there. It's one of the coolest things I've certainly seen in sports. But to the association, though I could talk Tiger Woods all night, Toronto's tough to figure out. They're deep. They get back with another high seed, and they lose another game one at home. Do you think they're in any sort of legitimate trouble against the Magic?
You know, I think of sort of the teams that lost their game ones, the favorite home teams. I feel probably the best about where Toronto's at. It took sort of a ridiculous DJ Augustine game to kind of get them there. It took the Raptors missing some pretty open shots. And I still think that you saw, you know, Kawhi Leonard looked really good. I think you can feel like, and while he struggled in the playoffs, he's really struggling game ones. I think Kyle Lowry's a better player than he showed, you know, on Saturday. And I just kind of like that this team is sort of built for a long run, right? You just look at their roster, you see sort of the mixture of experience and young players, guys like Pascal Siakam, who was not at all phased in sort of his first real playoff showcase. And yeah, I feel better about Toronto than I do, I think, about Philadelphia or Denver, certainly better than I do about Denver. I just kind of really like this team, and they seem sort of destined for a conference finals appearance. The Bucks today, even though no Blake Griffin in that game, I think they put everybody kind of on notice to say, too, that, you know, we're the team that we've been this good all year. So that Eastern Conference, I think, that's probably why the NBA feels so open right now, is because, you know, I see three teams really that could give the Warriors a good series out East.
Who do you think gives them the toughest matchup?
Weirdly, I think it's the Boston Celtics on paper. I think that's the team that sort of has the best combination of length and sort of can match what the Warriors do best. the big issue with the Boston Celtics is that this is a team that hasn't been together internally all season. They've dealt with chemistry problems. And, you know, you don't really discover yourself, I don't think, in the playoffs. I think that's a really hard thing to do. Milwaukee, you know, split with Golden State during the regular season, beat them by 20-plus points in Oakland earlier this year, lost a close game in Milwaukee. I don't think there is quite up to it. Giannis is this, you know, incredible unicorn, impossible matchup, but I just look at their supporting pieces and you look at what the Warriors throw out there. I just think that Boston has the talent, the top-to-bottom talent. And I think Toronto, again, is a team. Kawhi Leonard has traditionally played very well against the Warriors. He's been very hard for them to guard. You can guard Kevin Durant. You can switch him out to Steph Curry. They've got Marc Gasol, who's a really good defensive player. Kyle Lowry's a really good defensive player. You know, I like that matchup, too. Obviously, the Warriors would be favored no matter who they play. But I do think that Toronto and Boston are probably the top two teams that I think that could really give Golden State some fits if it comes to that.
Dan Wyke covers the NBA for the LA Times with us on CBS Sports Radio. Just to clarify, are those the toughest teams for the Warriors out of the East or overall? Because I still would love to see them get Houston again.
I mean, I think the Houston Rockets, obviously, you know, are a team that they were on to something last year, right? You know, without Chris Paul, they're an incredible, you know, sort of 0-for-27 shooting performance away from, you know, making the NBA Finals, from eliminating the Warriors. I mean, it took one of the flukiest things that I've seen in a game I've covered in purpose. You know, to do that, it's almost easier to go 27-for-27, right? So
right.
I do think that Houston's a team that's played very well. I'm not crazy about their depth. You know, obviously you always worry about Chris Paul in the playoffs. It always seems like something that comes up, whether it's a hamstring or, you know, a thumb injury or a broken hand. But if they stay healthy, you know, I think that second round matchup with Golden State is going to feel a lot like the conference finals. And I would expect it to go six or seven games. I think it'd be really close.
There's always ramifications for free agency off of NBA playoff results, but it feels like that's on steroids this year, right? Boston and Kyrie, Toronto and Kawhi, the Warriors and KD. Which major free agent decision do you think is most tied to the results that their team has in the playoffs?
I think it's Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. Or maybe Boston and Kyrie. Those are the two that feel the most sort of, you know, kind of up in the air at this point. Kawhi is so hard. I mean, that's why I'm here, right? Is to try to get an eye on where they're at, you know, as an organization with him. Where's he at with the city? And he's a hard read. You know, he's not the most expressive person in the NBA. Notoriously quiet, very stoic. I was talking to Nick Nurse today at practice, and I'd asked him, I'm like, well, what does Kawhi look like when he has a bad day? And he's like, I don't know that I've ever seen him have a great one. You know, I've seen him have sort of like these, like, they all seem sort of like B-minus days. Like, every day is kind of the same with him. And I think it's hard. I don't think they know exactly what, you know, he's going to do. And I think a run very deep into the playoffs, I know certainly people within the Clippers organization, the favorites to kind of land him if he were to leave Toronto. I know they're very much watching Toronto in this playoff to see, you know, rooting very much against them. Then again, though, you know, this is all what we thought last season with Paul George, right? Is that there's no way he's going to come back, especially after they lose in the first round. And sure enough, I think the early loss probably is a part of the reason why he stayed. You know, he said as much as that he felt like he had unfinished business in Oklahoma City, and you know, he built these connections with these guys, and to go through that sort of adversity, it only grew closer. It's really hard to tell. I just think that it's sort of like the way the league views it right now is sort of like, you know, Kevin Durant's mind is probably made up almost regardless. People seem to think he's leaving, but that's the caveat that Kevin Durant changes his mind a lot. Kyrie Irving, sort of same thing. Philadelphia, it's hard to imagine that they're going to bring everybody back. Maybe Jimmy Butler's on the outs there. And so, you know, who's left? And I think it's Toronto and Kawhi. That's the most sort of like, that's the biggest domino that can fall, I think. If Toronto struggles, Kawhi Leonard leaves, all of a sudden that could put a ton of, it could kind of really be the springboard towards, if the Clippers get him, now they have another max spot. You know, do they get a meeting with Kevin Durant? Do they look that way? And if they do that, do they look at Anthony Davis? And can they, like, really stockpile? They're in that position, I think. Obviously, the Knicks are in a position where they can do some really big things in free agency. Those teams are, I think, in particular, like, watching these superstars and kind of rooting for everybody else that's flying.
It's great stuff, and it's the game within the game in the NBA, and it's why I love it so much. But also there's, you know, the Lakers and LeBron. Yep. If they don't trade for Anthony Davis, which I assume is still plan A, what's plan B?
You know, I mean, I think Magic Johnson, sort of in his bizarre resignation speech, I don't know, speech seems like it's too structured of a term for what that was.
Gathering?
I was there for that. Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like a exorcism of thoughts, I think, is sort of like the way I would it was like they were all pulled out of him.
He should try out for Sports Talk Radio.
Yeah, seriously. I think that, you know, he laid it out there, is that this is a team that is going to operate in free agency, right? Is that we're going to get another star. That this isn't about, you know, finding the right role players, finding, you know, the three-point shooters, the two-way kind of, you know, the Danny Greens of the world to put around LeBron James. That plan A is to find him a running mate, to find him a Robin, you know, and I think it. Anthony Davis has that plan still. Now, there were a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of bad feelings about how those trade talks went down between the two teams. You know, there are rumors that, you know, New Orleans will never let Anthony Davis be traded to the Lakers, you know, even just driven out of spite over the way that trade request was made and sort of the view that the Lakers are part of it. Whether or not that holds up now that they've got a new front office, I would hope that spite isn't a driving factor in decision-making. That's typically a bad idea. But, you know, it's going to be hard. It's a hard sell. I think the Lakers trade package has certainly only gotten worse. You've got Lonzo Ball, you know, with that terrible ankle injury. He hasn't been on the court for a whole season yet. You've got Brandon Ingram now dealing with blood clots. Kyle Kuzma, I think, probably helped his stock a little bit. But, yeah, it's. I mean, they have a lottery pick to add in the mix in trade talks now. But it's not the shine is off some of those sort of prospects. And I think it'll be challenging for them to get that deal done. So from there, it just kind of – you start looking at free agents and you start saying, well, who's going to come? Is it going to be Kemba Walker? Can they get him? I know he's somebody – that some NBA insiders kind of feel like would be a good fit. You know, is it Jimmy Butler? That's a name that comes up a lot. Is it going to be that tier of next free agent? It doesn't seem like they're in on the KD, Kawhi Leonard, that tippy top level of free agent. It's going to be kind of a secondary thing. And what I wonder is if instead of doing that, if they can't get an Anthony Davis deal worked out, do they then look at sort of the second tier of trade targets? Do they make calls on Bradley Beal? Do they check in on Karl Towns and see where Minnesota's at with his extension? If that's something, or I'm sorry, he already extended, but like, is that going to be a place that he wants to be? Do they poke around sort of at that next sort of level? Do they look at Mike Conley and move that way? Because it dries up really quickly in free agency, and I think the worst thing the Lakers can do, and this cost sort of the previous administration their jobs, is when you have cap space and you're desperate to spend it, you spend it stupidly. You know, like, it's
well, yeah, because am I crazy? Like, LeBron and Kemba, LeBron and Jimmy Butler, that's just good enough to get beat, right? I mean, LeBron and Kyrie can win. LeBron and Anthony Davis can win. LeBron and Kawhi can win. But LeBron and Jimmy Butler can't win a title.
Yeah, I mean, I think in those scenarios, again, what the Lakers are counting on is, you know, interior improvements, right? You're hoping that the Brandon Ingram you saw the last 2 weeks before, you know, his season ended, the guy was averaging, you know, like 20 points a game, that is sustainable, right? You're hoping that the Lonzo Ball that had them playing, you know, top 10 defense, and you saw sort of what happened to that team defensively when he wasn't playing, that stuff can get them over the edge. I'm with you. I don't think those sort of second-tier max free agents with LeBron are good enough, but I also don't – they're kind of stuck, right, Danny? They're in this position where you can't sit and waste another year of LeBron James. you know, if there's one lesson to be taken out of this season for Laker fans, it's that you didn't get an invincible guy, right? That this is somebody who, you know, he can be injured. He can miss 20 games in the season. And then even still, when he comes back and despite playing as great as he played, there's no guarantee that he can even drag sort of whatever you put around him to the playoffs. All of those sort of myths have been broken now. So what do you do? How do you form a roster around him? I think the clock is ticking on him, and it's ticking for the Lakers, and that's why this is such a pivotal offseason. So many pivotal decisions to be made organizationally, whether it's going to be Rob Pelinka calling all the shots, whether it's going to be, which it seems like he's going to be a big part of any decision that gets made. You know, getting the right coach, not getting someone who has to learn on the job. Clock is ticking for the Lakers, and they need to move quick.
It's great stuff. Circling back around with Dan Wieke, national NBA writer for the LA Times, you mentioned it's just kind of widespread league consensus that Kevin Durant is going to leave, whether the Warriors win or lose this title. It's rare that players in their prime voluntarily break up a dynasty. And yes, he changes his mind, and yes, he's tough to figure out. But is there a league-wide consensus as to why Kevin Durant wants to leave, even if they win?
I mean, I think it mostly comes to legacy sort of stuff, right? And one of the strangest things that I've seen sort of being around the Warriors these last two seasons and kind of seeing what it's been like to be at Kevin Durant kind of on the Warriors, the thing that sticks out to you most is, you know, this is a guy who is, that in my opinion, no worse than the fourth best player in the NBA, right? Probably in the top three, and I think, or maybe even higher. He's not the third most popular player on his team, you know, in his city. You know, he, no matter what, he's always viewed sort of as a mercenary there. He's not Stephen Curry. He's not Klay Thompson. He's not Draymond Green. He's not Andre Iguodala, you know, in a lot of ways. And sort of Golden State, he wasn't the day one guy there. And I think that that's an odd thing. He doesn't get credit for their titles. They all kind of come with a fait accompli sort of idea that this is just going to, you know, they're the Warriors. They're just going to go win again. And they could go win again this season. He could win another Finals MVP, and again, you know, none of that stuff will build to his legacy. Now, you know, if he goes somewhere else, if he goes to New York, if he goes to the Clippers, if he goes to Brooklyn, you know, and wins somewhere else, he can kind of reestablish that. It's like, yeah, I can do this on my own too. And I think that does matter to him. He's a very human person. Obviously, his sensitivities towards things are very well noted. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily, it won't be born out of the fact of, like, you know, yeah, they had dust ups this year with Draymond Green and stuff like that. I don't think any of that stuff will drive him to leave. But I do think that's sort of the idea that, you know, he's never really done it alone. Like, I think he wants that chance again. Not alone per se, but just not with that team, you know, that sort of juggernaut. I think it's sort of like, it's akin to just someone like, you know, an artist wanting to go solo. And I think that's been sort of the consensus as to why he would leave. You know, the reason for him to stay is they're moving into this new building. It's going to be different, you know, in the Bay Area. It's not going to be Oracle Arena. It's not going to be the same sort of Steph Curry takes a 30-footer at the most pivotal moment in the game and the entire crowd sort of wills it in. That connection might not be the same when they move into the Chase Center in San Francisco. It might be a little more corporate. And, you know, maybe there's a chance to sort of reestablish some rules and maybe make that his building, not so much Steph's. I think that's sort of an argument for staying, but it's really hard, I think, if you're KD, you know, to kind of look at the way people talk about you and view sort of your legacy and have it always be punished by the fact that you happen to just join, you know, the greatest team probably of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is just keep the greatest team of all time together.
Yep.
Like, that's the other argument, right?
But I think there's a boredom in that, too.
I guess,
guys,
yeah.
Want new challenges. Yeah, I think guys want new challenges and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, I think on paper, the notion of going into Chase Center, I mean, look, he sort of has the league by the, you know, whatever. He can kind of do whatever he wants, right? He can go sign a max deal in New York and make that a free agency destination, you know, especially if New York gets that number one pick. and maybe uses that in an Anthony Davis trade on their own. That's certainly on the table, and he can kind of make his own super team in his image there with him as the leader. He can sign a max deal to stay in you know, Golden State and reestablish sort of the Warrior legacy as they move back across the Bay. Or he could sign a one-year deal and do it all over again. You know what I mean? And just sign a one-year max and enter, you know, enter free agency again, give himself a play option in case he gets hurt and kind of, you know, continue the leverage in the next summer. I think all of those options are on the table. It does feel like that he wouldn't necessarily want to go through another year of sort of speculation about what he's going to do and if whether or not he's going to leave. It seemed like that was a line that certainly Draymond Green crossed. I had an interview with Kevin Durant earlier this season, and that was what he said was sort of like that was like an off-limits topic in his mind as far as like joking around because that's livelihood and it's business. And, you know, I don't know that he would want to go through that again necessarily, but it's certainly possible. He has all the options.
Dan Wyke, national NBA writer for the LA Times. We've never done this on the radio, man. I really enjoyed it. We'll do it again. Thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, have a good night.
Yeah, appreciate you. That's Dan Wyke. Give that man a follow on Twitter. Read his stuff at the LA Times website. 855-212-4227. You want to talk some NBA playoffs? I think the NBA is going to be just fine, even though LeBron's out of these playoffs both this year and in the future in terms of its popularity. Thanks for being with us. It's the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Thanks for hanging out on the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio, radio.com sports. Sirius 206, our toll-free line at CBS Sports Radio is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all at geico.com. Great stuff from Dan Wyke of the LA Times. He illustrated nicely the game within the game that is the NBA playoffs, right? If Boston makes the NBA Finals, maybe it makes Kyrie more likely to stay. But if Boston loses in the second round, probably a certainty that he's gone. If the Warriors win the NBA Finals, well, it sounds like Kevin Durant's gone. And if the Warriors lose, it sounds like Kevin Durant's gone. Kevin Durant's a tough guy to figure out. He's probably in a category all of its own. If Toronto makes the NBA Finals, does it make it more likely that Kawhi Leonard stays or that he goes? There's Milwaukee's got decisions on a Middleton contract and doing everything they can to surround Giannis to be sure that he stays with the Supermax. They've done everything great so far, but they got a Chris Middleton contract to decide. Milwaukee loses in the second round. Are they going to make a decision that the team around Giannis right now isn't good enough for deep runs and it's more built for the regular season? We'll talk more about Giannis in a little bit. But I love that game within the game stuff for the NBA playoffs. There have been some headlines recently that have allowed the NBA haters among us, those who prefer college basketball or no basketball at all, to celebrate the downfall of the NBA. NBA ratings were down this year. I believe it can be directly correlated with LeBron James' injury, but more importantly, LeBron James being on the West Coast. LeBron James playing in a time zone for the majority of his games when 65% of the country is asleep for the second half of them, doesn't exactly translate to ratings. So he's not in that early TNT or ESPN time slot. He's in the late game time slot. The Lakers were bad. LeBron was hurt. His games were on really late. It led to a drop in ratings. But the reason why I wouldn't worry at all about NBA ratings is once LeBron leaves, it'll be like when Jordan left in terms of that type of figure leaving the sport. But when Jordan left, there was a legitimate dearth of talent in the NBA. 1999, right after Jordan left the second three-peat with the Bulls, there was a lockout, shortened season, no NBA All-Star game. I looked up the 2003 NBA All-Star game roster just for fun today when I was thinking about the talent in the few years after Jordan left. Listen to the names who were All-Stars in 2003. Jermaine O'Neal, Ben Wallace, Steve Francis started in the All-Star game in 2003. Jamal Mashburn, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Brad Miller, Antoine Walker, Peja Stojakovic, and Sean Marion. Like 40% of the All-Star roster was trash. This NBA's got no lacking of talent. and there's more talent on the way. Duke outrated the NBA on ESPN this year because of Zion, and Zion will be in the league next year. So LeBron will be back in the playoffs. He's still a top five player, arguably the best in the sport. Zion just beat the NBA in the ratings, and he's coming into the league. And after Jordan, there was a legitimate talent gap of who's next, who the next best player was in the NBA, who's going to take that torch. There had been a pretty consistent run of continuity. Dr. J, Bird and Magic, Jordan. And then there was this gap in the early 2000s before Kobe took it with Duncan and then to LeBron and all that. There was a little gap from 99 to like 04. There's no gap right now. So coming up next, I want to talk about, I think there's a clear answer for who's next as the next best player in the NBA. 855-212-4227. I want to see if you agree. 855-212-4CBS. Who's next after LeBron is the consensus best player in the NBA?
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Yes, you are. Thanks for hanging out. It's the Danny Parkin Show, Sirius 206, CBSSportsRadio.com, over 200 affiliates across the country. We'll get back to Tiger Woods at the top of the hour, but I was just thinking about the NBA playoffs and the NBA in a world without LeBron, because the playoffs don't have LeBron, but he's not done, right? LeBron's still a top 1 to 5 player in the league, right? But 35, had the groin injury, GM president in flux, coach in flux, questions of if the young talent is going to be able to get a tier one or even tier two player back in a trade. Can the Lakers build themselves into a championship contender while still having LeBron in his prime? That's very much in doubt right now. So these playoffs are giving us a glimpse into what the NBA is going to be like in a post-LeBron world. The NBA has not been in a situation like that since Jordan left the league. Because when Jordan left the league, there was not a clear next. There were great players, don't get me wrong. There was Shaq. Then Kobe came, and there's Iverson, and there's Tim Duncan, and there were great players. But that 1999 to 2003, 2004 era, there was a little bit of a dip in terms of the true marquee talent. LeBron just came onto the scene in 03. The Kobe and Shaq thing was coming around. But there was a little bit of a dip, and the ratings took a hit, and the league took a hit. I don't think we're in any sort of danger of that happening. Whether or not Zion ends up being a stud or not, he's clearly going to be a marketing sensation. Duke just outrated the NBA on ESPN. And it feels like Blake Griffin is his floor. And Blake Griffin was a superstar marketing engine hype machine early in his career. Remember the dunk contest where he jumped over a car? So I'm curious who you think the face of the NBA is going to be, because I think there's an answer. Durant's the second best player in the league to me, but I'm not sure that he's the face. If he goes to New York and wins, maybe he can become that thing, but I don't think so. I think Steph Curry somehow is still among the most underrated players in the NBA. He's an amazing player. He's the best shooter in the history of the league. He has transformed the game. So he's somehow underrated. But I don't think he's the answer. James Harden just put together the best individual offensive season since Michael Jordan. The numbers that James Harden put up, it's Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, James Harden, that's the list. He is the best one-on-one scorer in the NBA, though I happen to think if Kevin Durant was on a team where they did the offense around him like the Rockets do around James Harden, I happen to think that Durant could do what James Harden did this year. But I don't know that many other players, if any other players, could. But James Harden's in a perfect system for his isolation, one-on-one, four other guys around the perimeter, 500-plus dribbles a game, watch him work. But I don't think James Harden's the answer. His game isn't aesthetically pleasing enough. Russell Westbrook's incredible. Joel Embiid's incredible. Zion Williamson is a phenom. There is great talent in this league. But the answer to me for who is next is my man Giannis, that Greek freak. I honestly can say I saw it coming because I bet him before the year to win MVP at 5-1 for $200. Nice little win. But y'all, I didn't see this coming 3 years ago or 5 years ago. But he has that thing that Jordan had, that Kobe had, and that LeBron honestly had also, where he has taken a leap, not a step, a leap every year. He is a much better basketball player every year. Not a little better, a lot better. And he's 24 damn years old. 855-212-4227 if you take any umbrage with that. But I think that Giannis is next. Think about what Giannis did this year, all right? I'm going to give you just some facts. Fact number one, Giannis is 24 years old. That's a big one. Don't forget it. Fact number two, the Milwaukee Bucks are the one seed overall in the NBA. Best record in the league. Fact number three, they are a top three rated offense and defense in the NBA this year. Giannis is a top three defensive player in the league. He might win defensive player of the year. I think Rudy Gobert is probably a little bit more valuable defensively, but Giannis is pretty remarkable. Like that's really close for me as to who gets that award. And I haven't even mentioned the offense yet, individually. This is what Giannis put up this year. 28, 12, 6, 1.5, 1.5, as in steals and blocks. I think he was 1.3 on one, 1.5 on the other. On 58% shooting. And he's got the most appropriate nickname in basketball. He is a freak of nature athletically, so the Greek freak works. He basically dunked from the free throw line in an NBA playoff game tonight. And he had a move, got to the rim, got an and one, pounded his chest, screamed out, "I'm effing unstoppable." And, you know, I ain't going to argue with him. I've said this before when talking about Zion. I think Zion and Giannis are actually kind of similar. Now, they don't look similar. Zion is 6'7". Giannis is a legit 7'1". Giannis has an insane wingspan. He's thin and long. Zion is built like a refrigerator. But I think that what they do that's so great is that they're zigging while the league is zagging. Giannis is dunking, going to the rim, high efficiency, shooting it at the rim, dunking, blocking shots, playing out of the post, slashing, when the rest of the league is three-point shooting and fanning it out and threes worth more than two and all that. So it makes Giannis unguardable because if you're as big as him, you're not as fast. And if you're as fast as him, you're not as big. And he can get from 30 feet to the rim in two dribbles, two steps. So he slashes and jumps all over people. He's basically unguardable given that the league's getting smaller and more spread out. And I think Zion will do the same. I think Zion will be a 20 and 10 guy next year. But what's crazy to me about Giannis is that is anyone out there convinced that he's not going to add a three-point shot? Because he shot more threes every month of the season. Shot more in March than he did in February, more in February than January than December, and so on. And with his demeanor, yo, honestly, he's not like Shaq. I heard Bill Simmons call him, you know, the modern Shaq. he's the modern Shaq in terms of he dunks on people and the efficiency at which he scores and the prowess at both ends. But Shaq had some true limitations because of just how big he was. He couldn't shoot free throws. His hands were too big. He was a circus act if he shot a three-pointer in an all-star game. Giannis is like a more muscular, thicker Kevin Durant. He's only 24. Are we positive that in 2 years, Giannis isn't shooting 38% from three? Or 40% from, like, are we positive? Because I'm not. I think it's in play. Like, is it not in play that Giannis just next year in the opener hits five threes? Why is that not in play? Did you guys read that story from Malika Andrews on ESPN.com about his routine and his regimen and how disciplined he is? Dude is a freak of nature. He just loves basketball. He turned down LeBron to be in Space Jam 2 because he doesn't want to mess up his workouts. He doesn't work out with stars in the offseason. He lets Kobe give him tips off video, and then he goes into the gym and works on it. But he's one-track mind, basketball, 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 killer instinct, add to his game. I think Durant's the second best player in the league. I believe that. And that because he's got Klay and because he's got Steph and because he's got Draymond and they've got the perfect system, they kind of cannibalize each other in terms of greatness. Like I believe that. But in terms of who's next, who can get to that consensus place as best player in the NBA, I think we are one, if not 2 years away from it being Giannis. Because, yo, I just don't know what can't he do. If he's gotten this good on both ends of the floor at this young of an age in Milwaukee, and no disrespect, but it's not exactly a star-making capital, with nice talent around him, but not, I mean, you don't have a top five point guard. You don't have a top five shooting guard. You don't have a top five small forward. You got nice pieces. Brogdon and Bledsoe and Mirotic and Middleton. He's got nice pieces. And Middleton, I know, is an all-star this year because they were winning so much. But he's got a bunch of nice pieces, and he's going to win MVP. I think he's next. 855-212-4CBS if you want to weigh in. And if you were rooting against Tiger Woods today, I got to hear from you. I want to break this down. I want to know if you were rooting against Tiger Woods. It's the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.